Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
Audio cut of the day coming up. I also have some Clint Black tickets to give away. He is at the Family Arena on the 12th of April, coming up here a week from Saturday. I don't think I even talked about the resignation of the interim president from Columbia University yesterday, but that was a story from late last week into the weekend. And it's interesting because, no offense to those people listening who are professors at WashU or SLU or UMSL, but I've long made the case here for the past several years in particular that academia is one of the major problems with this country. And they're brainwashing these kids. These kids are really coming in brainwashed anyway, and they're just continuing it. But it's interesting because her resignation in particular, Katrina Armstrong, may have sent this message because these academics, they don't like being told what to do by the administration. They want to fight. They want the resistance. So I don't know if they're learning their lessons here when it comes to some of the messages that are being sent out there about DEI on down. But we have with us this afternoon to talk about this Naomi Schaefer Riley, who is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. She's written a book called No Way to Treat a Child. She wrote about this in the City Journal. Naomi, how are you? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So what do you think, just kind of focusing in on Katrina Armstrong and that resignation, the interim president at Columbia, why did she step down?
Well, I think, you know, whoever enters that role is caught between a rock and a hard place. I mean, yeah. You have a whole group of faculty who have been, you know, coddled. They've been told that they deserve all of this federal money. They've been told that they can act however they want. They can protest. They can use their classrooms as, you know, venues for social activism. And there is no accountability. And all of a sudden now, you know, the Trump administration is trying to create some of that accountability, and the president is acting as kind of the go-between. And I just don't think there's any way to win. And I don't know how the new president that they've just installed, Claire Shipman, is going to do any better. I think they could run through a lot more people before they figure out a way to deal with this issue.
Yeah, well, and it's a little more complicated than this, but let's just kind of bottom line it here. Look, the Trump administration's trying to withdraw $400 million in grants. They say that, and accurately, I think they make the claim that Columbia has not addressed the rampant anti-Semitism and some of the other issues on campus, right? So they're putting some conditions on that. The higher ed folks don't like that at all, especially from this guy in the White House.
So then, no, absolutely.
Yeah, so then what you're, part of the point of your piece is that, you know, maybe Columbia gets this a little bit because they're on the hook for all this money, but have these other Ivy League institutions, elite institutions, learned any lessons here in the last couple of years? And your fear is, no, they have not, right?
Yeah, there was a recent survey that was done by the website Inside Higher Ed where they actually asked more than 100 college presidents about what they thought was going wrong. And some things that sort of jumped out at me that I wrote about in this piece were only 11% of the presidents identified ideological bias as the biggest cause of public mistrust in their institution. And even only 20% acknowledged that it was actually a valid concern. So given, I think, what we know about about kind of what the public thinks about higher education, I would say, you know, definitely more than half of the country is very concerned about that. And I don't think it's just a Republican issue. But even if you just look at the Republicans' numbers, a decade ago, 56% of Republicans said they had confidence in higher education. And that number by last year had dropped to 19%.
That's fascinating. So let me hone in on that, because that's an interesting number there. And if you go back a decade, look, we often point here in St. Louis to 2014 with Mike Brown, BLM, sort of the nucleus of a lot of this nonsense. But I think a lot of it in the aftermath of Ferguson, then, of course, you get into George Floyd. That's where a lot of this sort of stemmed from before what happened in Israel, if you're kind of being honest here, right?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a gradual process. You know, I graduated from college almost 30 years ago, and I went to an elite Ivy League institution, and I would say that it was definitely ideologically lopsided, but it is nothing like it is today. It is nothing like, first of all, the cancellation of people who express divergent views. There's nothing like that. I mean, people are, you know, much more afraid to speak up in classrooms. I worked for a conservative-leaning paper in college. When that paper recently tried to start up again, they had trouble finding people to write under their own names.
So I think
that the atmosphere has just deteriorated significantly. And I think, you know, most Americans of a certain age really recognize that as a problem, regardless of their political affiliation,
so,
frankly.
So I've shared this story a couple times with the audience and with friends recently, and I'll tell you what happened sort of in synopsis form. But this represents a lot of what you're talking about here. And I was contacted early in December by a listener who had some audio tape from a journalism class at the University of Missouri. That's my alma mater. I didn't go to Ivy League. I just went to J school at Mizzou. But, and that was like 40 years ago. But this guy says, you got to hear this audio. It's from a professor, documentary film class, the day after the election. So he shares the audio. I'm given explicit permission to share the audio on the air. But what happened was the dad of the kid that sent me the audio kind of freaked out, didn't want the kid to be targeted. I understand that as a parent myself. But what it did was, it gave me this audio that I listened to, and it also gave me an opportunity to connect with the dean of the journalism school at Mizzou, who I did not have a relationship with, David Kerpius. And I reached out to David, and I said, hey, you got to hear what your professor is saying in this class. And I'm just going to tell you, Naomi, it's outrageous what this guy said. Yeah. I've never played the audio because I promised that I wouldn't, but it's unreal. And here's the thing, and what David Kerpius, the dean, told me, and he was very stern when he shared this with me. I went to Columbia and had a conversation with him about this very issue. I also shared this audio with the governor of Missouri, Mike Kehoe. But what he said to me is, well, I've dealt with that and that won't happen again. And what I kind of said is, okay, fair enough, maybe that's true. But here's what I know for certain, having heard the audio. I know that it's happened every damn day leading up to that. This is not isolated. This didn't just happen in the day after the election. Sure, it was, you know, more emotional because of what happened on that day, but there was clearly at least one kid in that class that wasn't comfortable with the tone because he was recording the class, and this happens on a regular basis.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't, you know, look, the administrators don't have, and in some ways, the administrators have a lot of power over the campus atmosphere. And I think they are creating an environment where professors feel like this is their job. I mean, you know, the way students and faculty are recruited at these institutions now, you know, the students are writing admissions essays about how their social activism is the most important thing in the world to them. And they're, you know, sending those essays in, and the faculty are signing on to, you know, statements of ideological agreement in order to even get interviewed.
Oh yeah.
So you, what you've done is, even if you haven't said to a professor explicitly, it's okay for you to talk like this in class, you have sent the message that the goal, the overall mission of this institution is protest and resistance and, you know, siding with the right leftist progressive causes. And so I think that's the message the professors have gotten. And it's not surprising that you're having difficulty sort of, you know, managing them now, because that's what they think they're there for.
Yeah. Well, in my situation with the dean of the journalism school, he said, you know, and I was encouraged by this, but I'm also a realist, said, look, we are interested in diversity in newsrooms. And he was talking specifically about idea diversity. You know, we're kind of talking about some of that with NPR right now. One of the things that I said to him is, hey, don't take my word for all the bias out there. Look at what Yuri Berliner said. But here's the problem. Even if the dean of a university or the president of a university, if they want to kind of take things in a different direction, good luck, because where are you going to find the professors who are conservative? It's just not what happens. I don't know what happens to these crazy liberals, but they're the only ones that want to teach kids in college, I guess. Naomi, I don't know what to say.
Look, I don't know whether it's impossible to find people. I do think that there are people out there who'd be interested in doing this. The problem is, you know, especially for a, you know, a journalism kind of situation where you don't have to have spent your entire life in academia in order to teach at a journalism school. But I do think, yeah, conservatives definitely have a pipeline problem, and it's a chicken and egg situation where the more intolerant universities are, the less conservatives want to hang around them for graduate school and on and on. And so the fewer, you know, you have to choose from. But that being said, I do think that, you know, that they could make much better choices, even given what they have out there.
Well, you know who would make a damn good journalism professor? Me, because I know a lot about it. I've been a news director. I've been in journalism my entire life. Now, I'm a talk show host now, and I'm clearly biased. But I say that, and I kind of joked with the dean in Columbia. I wouldn't even be given one little sniff at teaching these kids because of my politics. I promise you that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that there is definitely an ideological litmus test in order to teach at most of these institutions. And the question is whether, kind of in the current environment, there is going to be any walking of that back. And frankly, I do think at the very least at these public, you know, state public universities, you could get more accountability. You could get people saying, look, these are our taxpayer dollars, and we demand, you know, something different from these institutions. You know, it's interesting because I think a lot of people have remarked on the fact that, you know, Columbia, you know, if they had wanted to, you know, if they really want to take a stand, they could say, fine, we'll dip into our own endowment in order to fund the ideology that we're so attached to. But they haven't done that. And if they're going to continue to depend on taxpayer dollars, then I think that they're, you know, the rubber's going to meet the road with the Trump administration. They're going to say, look, you want the money, you know, you have to start doing what we say.
You know, it is, I'm glad you brought up the endowments, because it's offensive. These universities, I don't know what the Columbia is, but Harvard, they, billions and billions of dollars in these endowments, and they want to use the taxpayer money instead.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's outrageous.
And you know, and it's not, you know, and the endowment is not, it's not taxable income. So, you know, another way to do this is just to say, you know, fine, you know, then we're going to start taxing the endowments.
Yep, I'm all for that. I'd like to have a lot of discussions along those lines. Naomi Schaefer Riley, thank you so much. Great reporting, great work here. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely,
all right,
thank you.
Take care. We got audio cut of the day coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.